She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we are going to give you a lot to think about. Some pretty heavy-duty stuff, but ending always with a message of hope, possibility, and change. I just want to mention again, we greatly appreciate our sponsors, and a special thanks today goes out to the Fairfax Companies. They've been with Mrs. Green's World from the very beginning, and they are the largest privately owned landfills in the Southwest, and it's a company that's totally committed to recycling every bit of waste that it possibly can, and they do great things for our community in addition to taking in landfill waste and repurposing it. Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. We've got a very important, powerful, and on-purpose show today. And part of it is because of my own personal journey as Mrs. Green, which actually started with a trip to the Amazon. I am thrilled to welcome our guest, Leila Salazar-Lopez. She is the program director for Amazon Watch, whose mission is very clear, supporting Indigenous peoples, protecting the Amazon. There it is. It leaves no doubt about what they're about. It's a very big mission. It's very important and has implications for all of us. And Leila has the responsibility for overseeing its programs and campaigns to defend the Amazon. Talk about a big job. No pressure, Leila, and advance indigenous people's rights. So welcome. Thank you very much for taking time out on a Saturday. I know you just got back from South America, so we're thrilled to have you live this Saturday.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, why don't we start, if you don't mind, a little bit on the personal note, because your story is quite compelling about how you decided to, you had a profound change, and you, your journey started with a trip to the Amazon, I believe, and it was impactful and inspiring. So tell us about that journey and why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, well, while I was a student at UC Santa Barbara, I had the opportunity to do a summer internship in the Ecuadorian Amazon. And, you know, this was in the early 90s. And at that time, you know, we had kind of come out of the, you know, Save the Rainforest movement. And it was, you know, a little bit after Rainforest Action Network had gotten started. And I just remember, you know, seeing and hearing about, you know, the rainforest burning and hearing about Chico Mendez and hearing about, you know, Sting traveling around the world, promoting rainforest protection. And those are the things I knew about the Amazon. And as a young person, I just felt like I want to see the Amazon before it's destroyed. I want to see the Amazon. And so I went down to volunteer at a rainforest reserve called Hatun Sacha Biological Station in the Ecuadorian Amazon. And while on my way down through the cloud forests and into the Amazon, our bus stopped, and the reason it had stopped was because there was an oil pipeline break. The SOTE, the Trans-Amazon pipeline, had broke and had ruptured, and oil was spewing into the Papayacta River, which is the main water source for the city of Quito. And oil was just gushing into the river, and we were just watching it. And I that was my moment, my revealing moment of, wow, what is going on here? And I didn't even know there was oil in the Amazon at that time. So
I don't think most people do. I mean, I think you're right. It's like we just think of this pristine forest we're supposed to. And that is going back. That was like 1995, I think, mm-hmm. if my research is correct. Mm-hmm. What I read is that, you know, it wreaked havoc on communities and ecosystems through the entire Amazon basin, which is part of, you know, more of what I want to talk to you about. One country can agree to this, but then the other countries can be severe victims of that one country's actions. So I'm sorry to mean to interrupt, but go on about the journey, aha moments.
That was my, you know, in environmental studies, which is what I studied at UC Santa Barbara, one of my majors. We call it the shocker moment. It's a moment, I mean, in Santa Barbara, the shocker moment was the oil spill in 1969. For me personally, the shocker moment was seeing the oil spilling into the Amazon, into the river. And for me, it felt like nothing was being done about it. Of course, you know, later I learned that that pipeline was built by Texaco. Pipeline Texaco was a company who was basically given permission to, a contract by the Ecuadorian government at that time in the mid-60s to basically develop, build the infrastructure for the oil development of the Ecuadorian Amazon, of the northern Ecuadorian Amazon. And Texaco, which is now Chevron, basically what they did was they set up the oil infrastructure, they set up the roads, they set up the pipelines, they set up the drilling wells, and they drilled and dumped. And so now what we know of what happened at that in the Ecuadorian Amazon is many people have heard of the Chevron versus Ecuador, the Chevron trial, the Chevron case, which 30,000 Ecuadorian villagers, campesinos, farmers, and indigenous people have brought a case against Chevron. And they brought a case in 1993 because of the devastation to the Ecuadorian Amazon, to the Amazon and the indigenous cultures and the farming communities there. And that's what I saw when I went down there. I went down to the Amazon. I spent my summer there, but I also learned about the impacts of oil development on the region. And that's pretty much what turned me into an activist, going down there and seeing that. And I literally came back and said, I want to do something about this. And little did I know, at that time, the Amazon Watch didn't exist.
Right.
We started in 1996. The long story short is I kept going back to Ecuador on my summers, working at the biological station and learning about, the biological and cultural importance of the Amazon, and then also getting involved in activism. And at that time, there was a campaign targeting Texaco. The Rainforest Action Network had a campaign targeting Texaco. And the communities were just starting to get their lawsuit filed in New York. And the lawsuit was filed in 1993, and it took almost 20 years for a ruling to be made in Ecuadorian courts. And in February of 2011, the Ecuadorian courts decided and ruled that Chevron was guilty for destroying and devastating the Ecuadorian Amazon, and that they had to pay reparations to the community and they had to clean up.
But that was started in 1993 and then it was settled in 2000.
The case started in 1993. It was filed in 1993. The company, you know, began its operations in 1964.
Right. But it took till 2011 to keep going through the courts. It's just amazing.
And they were in the courts in New York for almost 10 years. And Texaco did everything possible to get the case moved down to Ecuador. And then once it got down to Ecuador, they didn't want to follow, you know, the judgment.
Right.
And till this day, they say they are not going to, you know, abide by that ruling. They actually literally have said, you know, we will fight this until hell freezes over.
Right. Not guilty. A perfect segue to that is to give our listeners a kind of big picture idea of the genesis of Amazon Watch and how that came to be. And I know that I want to get into some of the campaigns that you're working on now, but it started in 1996. And talk about its really big mission and also its very large reach in South America and how that all got started.
Yeah, well, Amazon Watch, as you mentioned, is an organization, a nonprofit organization, that started in 1996 by our founder and executive director, Tosa Sulpani. And essentially, I mean, Atossa also was very passionate, and still is very passionate about the environment. And she had worked for City of Santa Monica and worked for Rainforest Action Network and worked on various different campaigns holding corporations accountable for rainforest destruction around the world. But it was the Amazon, the world's largest rainforest, that really kind of, you know, spoke to her heart. And so she traveled around the Amazon for about a year, meeting partners, meeting allies, and really realized the world's largest rainforest and most, one of the most biologically diverse places on the planet, a place that not only is important for biodiversity and for global climate change, it's also very important for the people who live there. The native people, the indigenous people, which is, there's over 400 different indigenous people's nationalities that live in the Amazon, in the nine countries of the Amazon. And she really, you know, connected with the Amazon and its people and realized there's so many different threats, and threats from infrastructure development, extraction, such as roads, major roads, mega dams, oil and gas projects, pipelines, mining projects, agribusiness projects. There are some, you know, we're not just talking about, you know, a small scale.
Right, one big bad guy. You know, it's so much more
pervasive.
We're not
talking about
right.
just a little, you know, a little bit of, you know, trees being cut down a
right.
little bit here or there. We're talking about massive infrastructure development that is threatening not just one part of the Amazon, but the entire Amazon itself, because the Amazon is an ecosystem, and it is an ecosystem that crosses borders and is an ecosystem that that isn't, that, as I mentioned, is not just important for, you know, the biological diversity, which is very immense. We're talking about one third of the Earth's plant and animal species, and one fifth of the world's freshwater come from the Amazon. So it's biologically and very, very diverse and very important, but for our global climate is also very important for the people who live there. And what Atossa realizes, you know, there's the people who live there have been the guardians of the rainforest of the Amazon for thousands of years. And if you look at a map of the Amazon rainforest, most of the green, most of the area that is protected is in indigenous people's territories, whether it's titled or it's actually, it actually has the title of indigenous people's territory. And so from the beginning, Amazon Watch has been dedicated to defending the Amazon and supporting indigenous people's rights. Our perspective is really that indigenous people, the people who have been guarding and stewarding and protecting the rainforest for thousands of years, are the best protectors of the rainforest. So our mission really is to support them and advance their rights so that they can continue to protect their rainforests, and we work side by side and in alliance with them.
And here's what I think, there's like the very selfish perspective that people can take, which is, you mentioned, so many of our medicines for modern diseases and illnesses and on come from mm-hmm. plant species that are there, that have been discovered. There are still so many not, because of the density of the forests. So mm-hmm. like, what's in it for me? Well, it could cure my disease, insert X. That's one thing. The other piece is the very air we breathe, the oxygen that provides for the planet. But I think you're my first guest that brought up, people, let's reel it back to what this is really all about. Are people that are living there and getting plowed under. They're getting plowed under and over and around, and their habitats are being destroyed, where they hunt is being destroyed, their cultures are being destroyed. I mean, when you talk about rainforest devastation, I think you bring up the best point of, it's not just about cutting down or burning trees. We're talking about human beings with millions of years of history on the land. What about this? When I first got involved with, it was through Pachamama, Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream, mm-hmm. it was surprising to me, and I think would be to most Americans, that the concept of owning land was not in place in many, many places in the rainforest. The tribal people, the thought of owning land is not even in their language. You live on the land provides life for you. So what does Amazon Watch get involved in that part? Has there been a lot of progress to getting title to the land? Because the government just came in and said, show me your title. Helped by, you know, Exxon and Chevron and all that. They don't really own the land. We can do whatever we want. And here's, you know, $100 million.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty complex, but actually pretty simple. You know, the Amazon, you know, if just for those people who've never been to the Amazon or just to visualize the amount of land we're actually talking about, we're talking about an area, it's nine countries, right? It's Ecuador, it's Peru, it's Bolivia, it's Brazil, it's Guyana, it's Suriname, it's Colombia, it's Venezuela.
Vast.
The Amazon, only in Brazil, is almost as big as the continental United States. I mean, we're talking about a huge area of land. And in that area of land, there are, you know, there are indigenous people, you know, as I mentioned, over 400 indigenous nationalities, groups throughout the Amazon. Depending on which country you're in, some of those indigenous groups have title to their land, you know, so they have patches of area of their land that are, that have legal title.
Right.
In some areas, for example, that's the case in Peru. The Achuar people in the Pastaza River Basin of Peru have titles to certain areas of their ancestral territory, but they don't have title to the entire territory, which they consider their whole ancestral territory, which is various river basins. In Ecuador, for example, the nine different nationalities there have title, official recognition to their ancestral territories.
Right.
So the Achuar, for example, the Achuar people in southern Ecuador, they have all of their ancestral territory is recognized by the government. The trick here is that whatever is underneath their territory, the subsurface land rights, the subsurface mineral rights, those are not theirs, according to the government.
You're
those
kidding.
Those are the state.
You have
so
to repeat
state,
that.
And that is why.
So I own the land, but
so
not what's under
what
it.
Has cost. What's above is yours, but what's below is not. But that's it gets even more complex because now there's as our the world's oil resources are dwindling, you know, not just the Ecuadorian government or the government of the Amazon, but
right.
You know, the governments and the corporations around the world are doing everything they can to get out the last drop of every bit of oil, whether it's, you know, light oil, heavy oil, sand, tar sands, and any bit of oil, you know, which we're calling the extreme oil, because it's the hardest to get. Everything that's been, that you know, has been drilled and produced so far has been what's been the easiest to get. Now, you know, that's why we're, what's happening in Canada with the tar sands.
Right.
You know,
now they have to invade the earth even more to get oil out. Instead of, let me just do my little rant. Instead of looking at alternative energy sources like solar, which would in fact not hurt the planet, but that's another show. So let's go back to the Amazon and the shocking, devastating information about, yes, you own your land, but what's under it, we can come and take right out from under you. Literally, it's more than appalling. Okay, so what we're going to have to do, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I would love to talk to you about, I thought it was very timely, that the front cover of National Geographic this month was about a tribe, the Kayapo in northern Brazil. And I'd like you to speak specifically to what it said, Leila, is that defenders of the Amazon taking on the modern world and winning. And as someone who has eyes and ears on the ground on a regular basis, I'd love you to talk about that. And even in reading every word of the article more than once, you know, are they winning and can we win when you're talking about companies that say, we're going to fight you forever because we have hundreds of billion dollars and you don't. So maybe we can talk about that when we come back and some of the other campaigns you're involved with. Everybody, we are having a great show, maybe not really great news, but something to inspire us to action. Leila Salazar-Lopez, who is the program director for Amazon Watch. Please stay here with me. Lots more interesting things to listen and learn about that impact our lives. Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love, Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange, sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear, now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if you've just joined us, I just want to warn you, we're giving you some pretty heavy-duty things to think about today. So important. So, like, let's get our head out of the sand, so to speak. My guest today, and I'm very pleased to welcome Leila Salazar-Lopez. She is the program director for Amazon Watch, whose very mission is supporting indigenous peoples and protecting the Amazon. And everybody, just remember, we live on one planet. It is a global economy. Everything has global impacts. And Amazon Watch is very active on the front line of where the invasions of the indigenous people and a rainforest that's so important for us to protect is going on. So, Leila, let's talk a little bit about the Kayapo in northern Brazil. And, you know, in the article it said they're fighting the Belo Monte Dam, and they thought they won, but it's back. So there you go. You're back, and we thought we won that. So talk about that campaign.
Yeah, actually, it's actually the campaign that brought me, also one of the campaigns that brought me to Amazon Watch. Because it is, you know, for those of you who remember Sting traveling around the world at the beginning, when before he began the Rainforest Foundation, Sting traveled around the world with Chief Haoni. He is the Kayapo chief who, one of very few Kayapo chiefs who still wears the mahogany lip plate.
Oh my God, it's like, it's kind of scary. Like, I'm serious. It is, I admit it. I looked at that picture and I was like, whoa, that is, people should go buy National Geographic or order it because it's really a big, huge wow. Sorry to interrupt, but I was like, oh my.
The photos in the January issue of National Geographic
are breathtaking.
Are beautiful.
Oh, they are beautiful. And,
so the Kayapo, Chief Haoni traveled around with Sting. This was in the late 80s. And what they were doing was they were traveling the world, petitioning the financiers of the dam project at that time, mainly the World Bank, to cancel financing of the Belo Monte Dam, which is a series of dams along the Xingu River, which is one of the largest tributaries of the Amazon River. And they were successful. They were successful in getting the World Bank to cancel financing. So the project kind of laid low for about 15 years. And then in 2007, the project came back under a different name, now called the Belo Monte Dam, which is still a series of dams. Seven dams along the Xingu River, the main dam at the Big Bend of the Xingu River, which is the most sacred It's the most sacred place to the tribes that live in that area, the Xikrin, Kayapo, the Arara, the Juruna people. And the project basically begins there with a massive mega dam, which is being built right now. Right now, it is the third largest dam in the world being built. Well, it is the largest dam in the world being built right now, but once it's completed, it'll be the third largest dam. It is devastating.
Devastating. Like, it'll just put it underwater. Like, I don't want to get melodramatic, but devastating forever. And is it for a power source? Is it to create power?
It is,
why are they doing this?
Said to produce 11,000 megawatts of energy.
Wow.
And that is what is the hope, to produce that amount of energy for, you know, they say it'll be for the local, you know, populations, but it'll also mostly be for the cities, the mega cities of Brazil, you know, São Paulo and Rio. And it's also the energy that's needed to power the country, the developing country. You know, Brazil is one of the strongest developing countries in the world right now. And it's the host of the World Cup this summer, and it's going to be the host of the Olympics in 2016. So in order to build all of those stadiums, in order to, you know, power the country for those global events, Brazil needs energy.
It's not because the new indigenous people,
power all of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is definitely, at what cost? That's the question, at what cost? And the cost is the survival of the Xingu River Basin, the survival of the fishermen who have, the fishermen and their families who have lived off that river for decades, and the survival of the Kayapo and the 14 other indigenous groups that live along the Xingu River Basin and in the Xingu Indigenous Park, which is one of the largest indigenous reserves in the entire world, where the Kayapo live. And, you know, they're threatened by the dam. They're also threatened by agribusiness. Their indigenous reserve is surrounded by soy plantations. Soy that is for, you know, for animal feed.
Right.
And for soy being shipped to India and China.
Right.
And it's surrounded by cattle ranches. So the Kayapo's survival depends on them having an intact reserve, their intact forest, which they have. But it also depends on them having a water source. And right now their water source is threatened. And so they are, you know, Chief Kayapo, Chief Haoni has been leading the resistance, and Chief Megaron has been leading the resistance for over 20 years. And now their children and their grandchildren and the young people are mobilizing, and they are, you know, they are... we had the honor of having Chief Megaron's daughter, Maya Lu, the first woman ever from the Xingu Indigenous Reserve to travel internationally. We helped facilitate her travel to the International Women's Summit, which I think you were a part of as well, in New York.
And suffering. It was life-changing. Another one of those, like, can I even believe that I'm here to talk about the power of women, which we'll get to in another segment. But let me just press pause here for a minute. When you talk about the tribe and the tribal leaders and their culture and that they're mobilizing to resist it, it's daunting to me to even consider. We're talking about big companies who don't play anything but dirty. That's my bias, and it's my radio show. They're, you know, they're back. They just have another name. And how can National Geographic and me believe that there's hope for them winning? What would that look like? How can they, you know, David and Goliath isn't even a good analogy. It's like we're talking about, you know, Mount St. Helens and a pebble on the ground and stopping the... It's like so daunting to me. You know where I'm going with it. So tell me
Let me just say that, you know, unfortunately, the first dam, the major dam on the Xingu is being built. We're talking about 100,000 workers from all over Brazil there working on the dam day and night. It's being built. over the last year, there has been some hope, and that hope really comes from the indigenous people and the local people in the Altamira region, them coming together, working together, and saying, you know what? The government hasn't consulted us. The companies haven't consulted us. They've said they have, but they haven't. And we are going to stand strong and protest this dam. They've had, just last year, they had over 9 occupations, protests on the Bellomonte Dam. And it wasn't because they thought they could stop the entire project.
Right.
It was because it was their opportunity to raise the public profile, to raise concerns about their rights being infringed upon, to raise concern about the over 14 lawsuits that have been filed that the government hasn't addressed. And you know what? The government had to respond. The government, because the government, as you mentioned, it is a lot about money. Because the government and the company were losing money every time 200 people went over there and occupied the dam site and 200 people went over there and protested, the workers couldn't work.
Right, right.
And every time they couldn't work, they're losing millions of dollars a day. And so the
well,
government
there you
has
go.
To send.
Hit them with your best
send,
shot.
They had to send their, you know, literally the president's, you know, they said they wanted to meet with the president. They had to send the president's chief of staff. And they actually had to fly last May. They had to fly nearly 200 people in a government aircraft to Brasilia to meet with the president's staff. And then literally the week after that, there was a major uprising in Brazil around the amount of money being spent on Bellomonte and on the World Cup and not on social services and not on health services. So my point here is that, you know, maybe the first dam will not be, maybe the first dam will be built.
Right.
But if the pressure can be continued and the unification of the tribes can continue, because that's really what's happening right now. You know, we're talking about tribes that used to
kill each other like they did, like not so long ago. That was, they were tribes.
Right. And now they're coming together saying, we got to work together because our common enemy is this dam. Our common enemy is this government. So we got to work together. And they are unifying. And they've had assemblies together, and they're talking about how they can continue to work together, because not only on the Xingu, but on other rivers, because every single major river in Brazil is slated to be dammed. There are over 60 mega dams being planned in the Brazilian Amazon alone. So they know that if they don't continue to resist and work together and unify and build alliances both in Brazil and internationally, they will lose. So they're not succumbing to that. They are working together. They are getting exposure, like in National Geographic, and they're going to the banks. And you know, they're also the Kayapo. Amazingly, they said no when the government came to them and said, "Look, you know, we'll give you $9 million. We'll give you $9 million in government funding if you stop resisting.
To just
you know, we'll
be quiet and go away.
If we didn't consult you, we'll give you
right.
$9 million.
Right.
The Kayapo refused. It's not about money.
Right.
It's
right.
about long-term survival. And long-term survival for both the people and the rivers and the rainforests and the planet is not about money. It's about keeping, you know, the rainforests and the communities intact and respected.
And you know, Layla,
so,
go ahead.
Instead of investing in these big dams, and my point, you know, the hopeful point is maybe the first dam will be rebuilt. But
right.
if we can stop, we meaning, you know, the indigenous people and their allies, if we can stop the other dams from being built, and we can continue to promote alternatives like solar and wind, which are gaining ground, which
right.
are gaining investment in Brazil, then we've won. And that's the hope. That's the hope, that we can, you know, promote clean energy instead of these dirty dams, and we can promote respect for indigenous peoples instead of just total disrespect and
devastation. I mean, which, yeah, and it does have a global impact. In terms of the tribes, when you talk about being offered $9 million and looking at what they live on, how simply they live. I mean, that's I can close my eyes and see the places that we visited deep within the rainforest. We're not talking about, you know, they have to keep up their big McMansions and homes, barely electricity in most of the areas. So to say no to that, I mean, it could be quite seductive because it could change their life in the short term in very significant ways, because that's a lot of money for not a lot of people. What is the role?
And some of the tribes have taken
the money.
The government said, okay, you say we didn't consult you, then let's negotiate, and we'll give you these beads and trinkets, and we'll give you some symbolic amount of money. We'll build you a school or a soccer field. But that obviously, you know, that's not going to last.
No.
That's not going to last long.
No, and thank God for the Kayapo knowing that that is just a really very much unacceptable solution. What about the organization Amazon Watch? When there is a situation like this, what type of roles do you play to help assist them in their fight? Because that is really what you're all about, helping support the preservation of the indigenous people.
So for example, if you know, our partners say, you know, we need support in mobilizing to, you know, we want to go to Brasilia to mobilize, you know, to speak with the government, or we you know, there's an indigenous mobilization, for example, and we need your support. Amazon Watch, we really focus on, you know, making sure that their voices and their concerns are heard.
Right.
So the best way that we can support is with communications.
Okay.
For example, there was an indigenous mobilization. The biggest indigenous mobilization in the last 25 years happened in October. And it wasn't just about Gullamonchi. It was about the threats to indigenous rights all across Brazil, because the agribusiness lobby in Brazil is really pushing for reduction of indigenous territories, reduction in the amount of indigenous territory that can be demarcated, more, you know, more access for the agribusiness companies to access rainforests and indigenous lands. So the best thing that we can do is support their communications, and maybe support their travel, for example.
You know,
Brazil is a big, big country.
Huge.
You know, and this goes across, you know, across the Amazon. You know, many times what they need support for is travel to be able to, you know, go to a meeting or go to an assembly or go speak with the press or go on a delegation, or, you know, to be able to participate in an event where they can clearly communicate, you know, what their vision is.
And literally help them get
there. Exactly what our vision is.
Yeah.
But our collective vision is that their land and territory be defended.
Right, right. So it's literally helping them to get from point A to point B so that their voice can be heard. What about your role in terms of keeping the outside world? Because there is a vast sea of good causes. I particularly have one that is near and dear to me because of my visit to the Amazon. It's like that is where it all started and why I became Mrs. Green. But, you know, now I'm concerned about the oceans. And I mean, there are so many issues. What is your role in terms of a voice to the outside world? And I just got the 2-minute.
Yeah. So obviously Amazon Watch, we provide direct support for our allies through re-granting programs.
Right.
You know, we have some supporters that, you know, support Amazon Watch's work, and some supporters who say we want to directly, you know, pass through funds so that to support the Kayapo.
Or right.
Support, you know, the community of Sarayaku. So we do re-grants. And, you know, a big part of our work is communications through online, through, you know, social media, through radio. And then another part of it is actually running campaigns, running grassroots and international campaigns in coordination with our local allies. For example, on the Chevron campaign, you know, the local communities filed their lawsuit, and they have a local campaign. There's a national campaign in Ecuador, and then this international campaign. Well, for over 12 years, we've helped run the international campaign, you know, specifically targeting Chevron, working with shareholders, who socially responsible shareholders who could file resolutions at Chevron, coordinating, you know, students and supporters and academics and activists to, you know, pressure Chevron through online
and
petitions.
That's brilliant.
Protests through, you know, presentations at universities.
Right, right.
Anything that we can do
but it's
to
pretty,
get the word out and to put pressure on the company.
Pretty brilliant to work with Chevron shareholders who can have power from the inside out. That was a very interesting piece that I picked up in some of the research I did. Okay, we are going to have to take another short break. Everybody, please stay here with me when we come back. Let's paint a picture of hope and the role that women play or are going to play in terms of the devastation of the rainforest. Stay here with me.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine. It's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines. It gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
You can save hundreds on home improvement by checking out Habitat for Humanity's Habastore. The Habastore sells new and gently used home improvement items for pennies on the dollar. You can find cabinets, doors, windows, light fixtures, furniture, and much more. Plus, our inventory is constantly changing. You'll be saving money, and all the profits go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson, helping to build a better community. The Habastore is located at 935 West Grant Road. You can reach us at 520-889-7200 or habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I did want to mention that we are doing a live Twitter stream at this time. If you have questions for me or for Layla, please just whip off an email, Gina at Mrs. Green's World, and we're taking questions. I've gotten some text messages saying great show. So I am interviewing Layla Salazar Lopez. She's the program director for Amazon Watch, whose mission is supporting indigenous peoples and protecting the Amazon. Very big mission, very big implications for all of us. So Layla, there's a couple of things in our closing segment that I'd like you to address because you do have the view at 60,000 feet. I want to talk about the role of women. I did go to the International Women's Conference of the Earth and Climate Change, which was incredibly powerful. But before we do that, is there an emerging leader among the countries in South America that's pushing back and more of an eco leader? Because I know with Brazil, it's not very heartening, and you know, you can't paint a broad stroke, but in your opinion, are there countries we can look to that realize the importance for the world to preserve the Amazon?
Well, that's a difficult question because yes, I do have the...
It's complicated.
View, but also, it's complicated.
Yeah.
I mean... you know, there's, you know, I wish I could say that it was Ecuador. You know, a couple years ago, you know, we had so much hope in Ecuador because of the very revolutionary and positive ideas to you know, defend the Yasuni National Park and, you know, the first country in the world have to recognize the rights of nature. But there's been some steps back. Step backwards with the, you know, the opening of the Yasuni National Park in August. But, you know, Ecuador, I was just there last week, and while there's, you know, there's a lot of threats to the Amazon and indigenous rights, and even our NGO allies, such as the Fundación Pachamama, you know, the rights of nature are a part of the Constitution. And just like any law in any country, it's up to citizens. It's up to citizens to make democracy work for them and for us.
And find their voice. Yep.
Exactly. So, yes, the rights of nature is recognized in the Constitution in Ecuador and in Bolivia. So it's up to the people to make it, to implement it. But, yeah, there are lots of threats throughout the Amazon. And the thing that really brings me hope right now is the power of unification and the power of women. Literally a couple weeks after the International Women's Climate Summit, one of our longtime allies, Patricia Walinga from the Sarayaku community, the Quechua community of Sarayaku in Ecuador, wrote to us and said, yeah, I'm so inspired, and the women are so inspired, and we're really concerned about what's happening with the 11th oil round, and, you know, many of our men are getting, you know, are negotiating with the government, and, you know, we have strong leaders, but, you know, the government is doing everything they can to try to break them, and the women need to stand up. And she said, we want to mobilize. We want to mobilize from the Amazon to the Andes, and we want to, you know, show that women aren't going to negotiate. And I just want to read you a couple of the quotes that she wrote to us and that they wrote, because I think it's...
Love it.
It is really what inspires me right now and inspires many of us to kind of keep going.
And have hope. Yeah. So, it's hard. It's daunting.
So just a little bit more background. I mean, it was a group of Amazonian women, indigenous women, many of them who've never even left their community. But they mobilized the town of Puyo in the Ecuadorian Amazon. They marched in Puyo, and they took buses to other cities throughout the way, 250 kilometers to the capital of Quito. They took about 5 days to get there, marching in every major city along the way with their babies on their back. We're talking about young women, you know, leaders like Patricia and Gloria Ushiwa, great, powerful women leaders who've been involved in the movement their whole adult life, and grandmothers. And then they had the men supporting them as well. They had their husbands and their brothers and their grandfathers behind them, this was a historic event, because this is not something that usually happens.
No, it's certainly not the cultural norm.
The men are the presidents, the men are in the front, and the women maybe will be there, or maybe a few women will be there. But this is what they said. From the depths of our bellies, Amazon women feel the negative impacts of extraction. They've divided our Mother Earth into concessions. They divided her into blocks as if she were cloth ripped into pieces, and then offered piece by piece in the market. This is not the destiny we want for our mother. This is what the Amazon women said in defense of life. So they mobilized. They organized this mobilization for life. And when they're talking about life, they're not talking just about the trees in the forest.
Right.
They are talking about the trees in the forest.
But their very life.
They're also talking about the seven generations that come after them. They're talking about, you know, their children, their grandchildren, and also the spirits, because it's the spirits who give them their power
and guide them. Truly.
So they came marching through the from the Amazon to the Andes, and all along the way they gathered more and more support. They had planned to be in Quito just a few days, but they ended up staying longer because they really wanted to meet with the president. The president didn't meet with them, but as they waited, they gathered more and more support, and they gathered so much media coverage. And that is
huge.
They gathered so much media coverage. They brought to life not only their concerns, but they brought to life their vision and their community's model of life, which they call Kausak Sachai, or the jungle way of living, which respects all of nature, respects all the guardians. It's a way of living that in a peaceful coexistence between people and the environment, or the people, the indigenous people, and the forests. And they brought this proposal. They had a proposal that they had thought about and written out, and they brought this proposal to the National Assembly, and they presented it. Patricia Walinga Quechua Indigenous leader who's actually running for office right now, local office in Puyo.
Unbelievable.
She presented it in front of the National Assembly. And I believe I sent you the link to that so you can share with your supporters, because it's just a beautiful, beautiful testimony to the women. And we just met with some of the women last week, and it's a confirmation that it really is a confirmation that it's really going to be the women who really lead us to a positive future,
and gives us and gives us hope
around the world.
Yeah, and it to me it conjures up the whole, you know, like there's nothing stronger than the mother instinct and protecting our children and all that that implies. You briefly mentioned in this conversation about the 11th oil round. Can you talk about that, about the next round and what that means and why people are so stirred up about it and how disgusting it is? If you want to throw that in, it's okay with me.
Well, the 11th oil round is basically the next wave of oil exploitation in the Amazon in Ecuador, and right across the border in Peru, the same thing is happening. I just want to mention, because it's not just in Ecuador, but it's in Peru. Everywhere between the Napo River all the way down to the Marañón River, all of northern Peru is also this whole area, this very sacred area between the Napo and the Marañón Rivers in the southern Ecuadorian Amazon and northern Peruvian Amazon, they've all been divided up into oil blocks. And Ecuador, a year ago, the government announced the 11th oil round, which basically they had announced over 10 million acres of rainforest, pristine rainforest, indigenous people's territory, open for business.
For sale. Open for sale. Put a for sale sign up there. It was
Yeah, and so the immediately, obviously, the indigenous people who live there, who've been resisting oil development and promoting a different way of life, said, no way, we're not going to allow this to happen on our territories, and immediately put out a call, and together with Pachamama Alliance, we put together an international petition and have been gathering support, and one of the things that immediately when the government said, we're going to start, auctioning off different oil blocks. They began in Quito, and then they went to Colombia, and then they went to Beijing and Houston. Everywhere they went, we were there as well. And we couldn't go physically to every single location, but we definitely had a presence in some way or another, telling the government and any of the companies that were interested, companies or governments are interested, that it wasn't going to be easy for them to invest or even begin operations in the Amazon, because the people were not going to let them in. And what ended up happening a year later, this last November 28th, was the final day for the oil round, and the communities mobilized, allies mobilized, and what ended up happening was a major failure for the government. Only a few companies made offers, including Repsol and the National Oil Company of Chile and Belarus, and mostly Andes Petroleum and Sinopec, which is a Chinese national oil company. Most of the blocks were bid on by the Chinese, which the government, that's a whole other show, but Ecuadorian government is indebted to. But there was very few companies that made offers for very few of the blocks. So we can say that the 11th round was a major failure, but in response, the government and the president were not happy at all, and they've launched an all-out attack on indigenous people and their allies. Have actually closed down the Fundación Pachamama in Ecuador and have filed criminal charges against indigenous leaders who led the protests. So that's the state of the situation right now in Ecuador. But I was just there last week with my colleagues, and, our allies are not backing down. They are going to continue defending their way of life and continue speaking up for Mother Earth, for Pachamama. And their rights.
So it's so being vigilant.
We got to do everything we can to support them.
Yeah, you have to stay vigilant, and it's like the dam. It's not going away. We thought we won that one, and then they come knocking again with bigger money and bigger investors and bigger voices. So Amazon Watch is perfect. We've got to keep watching the Amazon. So in the last couple of minutes we have, what we like to do on the show is talk about a call to action for people. There's, you know, to me, just this past week in the news, there is such hope when people get ignited about an issue through petitions, literally moveon.org, change.org, they're getting vast amounts of signatures in short amounts of time. So for people that are listening, for people that'll download the podcast that say, this is daunting, I don't even know what to do, what, like, just one thing would be a good takeaway? I know we want to mention your website, which is amazonwatch.org. Donating is always good. I'm going to just do that for you because it takes money to fight the big money. So every dollar helps, every $5, every $25. What other things can people do to help be a part of preserving the planet? It's not just about what's happening in those, down there. It's affecting our lives. So what's your sage advice about how people can have their own call to action?
Well, thank you for that. Definitely people can take action on our website, on our amazonwatch.org/take-action.
Right.
There's three actions right now that you can take. One, to stop Chevron. And just in the last week, there's been over 80,000 people who have signed a petition to the U.S. Senate to hold Chevron accountable, because Chevron,
and they pay attention to those numbers,
what they're doing.
Yeah.
But we are now trying to get support from U.S. senators to investigate Chevron's attacks on the people it poisoned. And another is sign the Avaaz petition to defend the Yasuni National Park, the most biodiverse place on the planet. And then also we have a petition to the Brazilian Supreme Court calling for justice in the lawsuits against the Belo Monte Dam. Those are three immediate actions you can take right now. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, yes, these things relate to the Amazon, but they also relate to corporate accountability with Chevron. You know, if Chevron is allowed to get away with, you know, subpoenaing our emails, with filing lawsuits against the people who sued them, who they poisoned, then other companies are going to start doing the same thing. So we got to stop that before it goes any further.
And when you talk about
that, the Yasuni National Park.
Go ahead. Sorry.
The Yasuni National Park is, you know, the most biodiverse place on the planet. There is no excuse to continue drilling in that place. You know, if drilling is allowed in a national park, then what's going to stop drilling in the southern Amazon or in northern Peru that are just as biodiverse? So we need to defend this part of the world. As you were talking about before, the earth, the Amazon, many people say is, you know, are the lungs of the planet, you know. All the trees,
it
all
is.
The moisture, all the evaporation
is.
That is, all the oxygen that is produced out of the Amazon, you know, not only helps, you know, the people in the Amazon, it helps us as well. We say, and the indigenous people of the Amazon say, the Amazon is actually the heart of the world. It's a giant pump of oxygen that is feeding, you know, the rain clouds, not only in the Amazon, but throughout the world. You know, rain clouds from the Amazon go all the way down to Argentina and go all the way north to Iowa. So if we don't have rain clouds from the Amazon, it affects us too.
And we all better pay attention. I mean, that's how I feel. We have 1 minute left, and I just want to take that minute to thank you for being on the show. Thank you for the work that you do. I was thrilled to meet people from your organization when I was in New York in September. And how appropriate is it that next week I'll be interviewing Osprey Lake, who is the author of the award-winning book Uprisings for the Earth and co-founder of the Women's Earth and Climate Caucus. She's a powerhouse. I know you'll agree with that. She's helping us change the world. It'll be her return visit to Mrs. Green's World. Everybody, make it a great green, intentionally lived week, and get involved with preservation of the Amazon for your own sake. Thanks, everybody.